gotta tell you the most amazing thing about my writing process the other day. So I had a very sick little one in the house, really high fever, and so my wife and I were taking turns one night and the other night about who was staying up all night because it was one of those situations where it was a very high fever. Anyway, it's 3:30 a.m., maybe 4 a.m. There's a point in the morning where you just reach madness, where you're like, I should not be awake anymore. This is not, I can't, my brain doesn't work. Like, you can go till 2 a.m. and still be a fairly functioning adult.
Yeah.
But you get to 3:34, 4:30 a.m., and it is just crazy town USA, right? It's not, nothing makes sense anymore. Anyway, it's about 4 o'clock. The little one's taking a moment to sleep between different medications. So I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to, I might as well just write. I'll just write. I'll work on Drive for a little bit. This is a great opportunity. I have an idea. So I bring out my phone, which I don't normally write with. I normally write on paper. And I start writing and I send a long email to myself. And I actually go, as I'm reading it through and falling asleep, I go, huh, that's pretty good stuff. Hey, this is great. This is really good stuff. Brad, I wake up the next morning. I get everybody sorted. And I'm like, oh, I'm excited to go back and reread that email.
Yeah.
And Brad, I have never been closer to the mouth of madness than reading the writing that I put down at 4:30 a.m. It was bonkers bananas. Nothing made sense. I don't even know if it was English in parts. Like, nothing. It was cuckoo bananas town. So I do not recommend writing while sleep deprived because it did not work out for me.
Do you still have the email?
I do, I think. I might have deleted it, but Google All Mail keeps it.
I'd love to hear an excerpt.
Oh, Brad, I can play an excerpt for you. Hold on. That's the excerpt. Thank you, Orson Welles, for dropping by to give me a quick reading of that email. That's what I got from writing at 4:30 a.m. All of it usable. Wow. And so I've pre-written the next 4 weeks of Drive. So good luck, everybody, reading that.
I've never been more excited to read an upcoming Drive.
Yeah, nor shouldn't you be. All right. Well, on that note, I'm going to say hello, everybody, and welcome to Comic Lab, the show about very sleep deprivation and trying to make comics.
And making a sleep-deprived comic from a living from comics. Holy cats!
We've even interpreted what it is to be sleep-deprived.
Yeah,
that was
no
great.
Kidding. I'm Brad Geiger, author of webcomics.com and the cartoonist of Evil Inc.
And I'm his friend Dave Kellett, the author of Drive and Sheldon, since we're now using author, and co-director of Stripped.
Stop picking on me. And this week's hour of comics advice is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. So Dave, let's talk comics.
Let's talk comics, my friend. We got a fun question to jump right into this week. Yeah. So I'm gonna jump right over on it, dear. So this comes in from Josh Hanno over at patreon.com/comiclab. And Josh writes, Brad and Dave, there's a lot of expected things that come with success. Money, fans, stability. But what has been the most surprising positive or negative outcome of your success that you never expected? So Brad Geiger, who I would describe as a tremendous success in a thousand ways in his life. What are the most surprising positive or negative outcomes of your success that you never expected?
There's one that really stands out. And it came, one of the markers that I had for my success, which wasn't necessarily success, but it was my own personal milestone, was leaving my day job and becoming a full-time cartoonist. And when I crossed over that threshold, I had one really big unexpected outcome from that, and that was this. Leading up to that, the first 12 years of doing comics that it took me to get to the point where I could consider leaving my day job, I was a time management wizard. I had it down to a science. And in fact, not only was I doing, if you remember, not only was I doing a 5-day, 6-day a week comic strip, but at different points, I was also, I had written a 200-page tutorial called the Everything Cartooning Book. I had co-written How to Make Web Comics. I was doing Courting Disaster once a week, a single panel. I was doing Fables, which was a full-page comic that ran in a newspaper. I was I was helping to raise my kids. I was the child care during the day. Since I worked nights and my wife worked days, daytime was, I was covering, child duties, as rightly so, because that's what a dad does. And, I'm not trying to make myself out to be more than what I am, but I list all that just to say that required a Herculean level of time management. I had it down to a science, and I did not waver from that science. When I left my day job, and of course, other things, also, you know, at that point, a lot of the book writing that I had been working on was done. My kids were older. When I quit my day job, my biggest challenge was time management, because what I found out very quickly was that time management is actually comparatively easy when you don't have that much time to manage. In other words, daycare was a must. Right. And getting kids to school on time was a must. I had to fit the comic into the moments that I had in between. And the fact of the matter is, I had very few of those moments. So I had very little time to manage. When I went full time, all of a sudden, I had a lot of time to manage. In other words, I was making a lot of decisions, and I made a lot of terrible decisions and immediately started falling behind, because for the first time in a real sense, I really was managing my time. It was like, oh, okay, I actually could do this or that, where before it was, okay, I need to do this. Now it was this or that, or the other thing. Sometimes it was this, that, or the other thing. And then nothing got done. So my biggest challenge out of quote unquote success was time management, which shocked me. I thought I was a wizard at time management. Turned out the truth of the matter was I just didn't have that much time to manage. What about you, Dave?
Well, my first, I have a lot of different answers to this question. By the way, this is a fun question. But so not in a falsely humble way, but I think Brad and I also would both acknowledge that we're making a go of it. But I don't know that either one of us would necessarily say success in a traditional sense of like, look at me in my solid gold car. However, I do think we would say success in like, I'm continuing to be a cartoonist, and isn't that a success, you know?
Right.
So just clarification, just because I don't want people to think that we're egotistically being like, look at us over here, because I don't know that it's that at all. But I will say this, like Brad has spoken about in the past, I don't know if I've spoken about it, but one of the things that I found when I was able to quit my day job at Mattel, which I love greatly, was that I was still the same person the next morning. And when I finished my documentary film after 4 years of working on it, I was still the same person the next morning. And when I won this or that award, I was still the same person the next morning. And not that you can't change, not that you can't grow, and not that you can't better yourself, because you can do all three, but there's still a huge chunk of you that is the same person no matter what stage of life you are in. And I find that interesting now that I'm older. But it was more of a shock when it first started to happen. It was like, when I become a cartoonist, Brad, I instantly transform into Bill Watterson. That's, you know, like when I can do it full time, I will transmogrify into Bill. Nope, still Dave Kellett. Still got the same problems and concerns and worries and faults and failures. Yeah, that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
So that's one thing, is that you a little bit ascribe such a magical moment to becoming quote unquote a cartoonist that when you are able to do it, there's a little bit of a denouement of, huh, well, I guess I'm a cartoonist now.
This feels an awful lot like being a schlub.
Yeah. This Wednesday feels an awful lot like Tuesday.
Yeah, well, there's that great cartoon. I'm sure you've seen it. It gets used a lot. And I'm blanking on the cartoonist's name, but it's a wonderful cartoon. It's a guy walking down the street. And he's dressed very nice. He's got a flashy hat on. He's got two beautiful women on either side of him. And there's a person running in front of him, pushing other people out of the way. And the caption is, "Look out, you schmuck. There's a cartoonist coming." And that's... That's how I always kind of thought it would be. And it's never been like that. it's been very much the opposite. It was very much like just being a regular person that nobody recognizes on the street and is worried about paying his mortgage next month, just like everybody else.
Yeah, who occasionally at cocktail parties, people go, oh, you're a cartoonist, huh? That's a thing? All right, well.
Yeah. How you can make a living doing that?
Oh, interesting. I thought newspapers were dead. All right. Well, anyway, I'm going to go over to this part of the cocktail party.
There's nothing to be had here.
Yeah, exactly. Or you get Paul Rudd gently touching you on the arm going, well, I got to go. So, you know.
Yeah, just kind of like a therapist. Our time is up.
But what are the parts of success? Okay. So let me talk about the parts that have been delightful to find. I have really enjoyed being able to get to a moment in my cartooning where I can hire people to be involved in my cartooning. And so that's both true with Beth in the studio here for 40 hours a week, of which I'm so thankful for her work and efforts and involvement. And but also with Tales of the Drive, when I can hire individual writers or artists, like to be able to hire Ryan North or hire Guru Hiru, or hire, you know, got any of the dozens of other people that I've done for Tales of the Drive. That's been fun. Just to let professional artists that you admire play in your playground. And by the way, here's a paycheck that's better than a Marvel paycheck. So thanks a lot. Bye. Like, that's fun. That's great. Right. So I love that. I've loved having someone in the studio. That's been a real wonderful part of the success, is that I get to kind of have my own little mangaka studio here. And isn't that lovely? And like Brad, I kind of always imagined that the cartoonist life would be a version of what like Mort Walker had, where you wake up at 8:30 a.m., there's a glass of scotch. I'll be on the links until 4. Come in, draw your Beetle Bailey, and then, off to the club to see the other cartoonists. And I don't know why I sort of imagined that was the cartoonist life, when more often it's like, get the kids to school. Oh, God, all right, back. Get a cup of coffee, try to think of an idea. Draw. And which, by the way, is lovely. It is a version of the life that I always wanted. It's just different than what I expected it to be. But in a wonderful way. I still get, like we talked about this in the last show, I still get a genuine charge out of the act of drawing and writing and sharing an idea. And I still get excited when I click submit and it goes onto the web. And how fun is that?
Yeah.
It's real fun.
Yeah. And by the way, it's not only is it nice to be able to hire people and to pay them well and to do stuff like that, but in my case, when it comes to somebody like Alex Heberling, what a joy it is to hire somebody who's better at you at a certain thing. Like Alex's coloring is better than mine would be if I stopped doing everything else and devoted my life to coloring for the next 20 years. Right. And it's like I can have that person become part of what I'm doing, and I can bring her aboard my team, and she brings so much to it. It's nice to be able to do that, to bring people on whose work you really admire.
Exactly, Brad. You really summarized it well, because what you're doing is like, I've been working on my line art for 20 years, but here comes Beth, who's been working on her coloring for 20 years. Here comes Ryan North, who's been working on his writing for 20 years. And how wonderful to have all these rising tides that are lifting this boat that is, quote unquote, my cartooning. And it's a joy-filled feeling to bring in specialists and incredibly talented people and basically playing in a sandbox. And how fun is that? So that's been lovely.
Right.
One of the last things, I don't know that I want to end on this, but one of the things that I've been unexcited about with success is the hassles of running your own business when dealing with all the different tax and regulatory bodies. And I'm one of those people that was raised that taxes as a moral issue, it's good to pay into the society that you live in. So I have no problem with paying into taxes. Mm-hmm. Pays for the roads and schools and water plants and all that sort of stuff. So I don't mind. I actually, in some respects, want to pay a little bit more. But it is annoying when you're running a business that I have to do the sales tax, I have to do the employee tax, I have to do the state and local and federal tax. Mm-hmm. And it just gets old. But it's one of those things that I didn't anticipate how much I would dislike it when I was starting as a cartoonist. I do it, and I do it every quarter, and it's fine. It's not a game changer. It's not a game ender. But it's just, I don't enjoy it. You know what I mean? It's one of those unhappy surprises where you're like, a lot of paperwork. All right, well, there's that. But in general, though, Brad, wouldn't you say that the I come back to this with such gratefulness to this kind of question, because I am grateful for the life that I have been lucky enough to been granted. It took a lot of work. It took a lot of luck, and it will continue to take a lot of work and a lot of luck. But I'm very grateful and thankful for the people who read my work and the percentage of them who then support the work. That is a wonderful, lucky, a joy-filled thing. And I think both Brad and I would say that our overriding mood with our cartooning is gratefulness and joy that we get to do another week of being a cartoon, you know?
Yeah. Do you ever get to Friday and the clock ticks down on Friday, the sun goes down and the moon comes up and you go, oh my God, I did it for another week.
Yeah.
I fooled him again.
It's funny to hear you say that. Yes. Yeah. Friday specifically in our family is family movie night, and we rent a movie and we have a pizza.
Yeah.
And whenever I get to that night, I'm like, holy crap, I did another week. This is great. I got to be a cartoonist again. That was considered a week of quote unquote work. How fun, you know?
That's like what a trapeze artist must feel like when he reaches that second swing. You know, it's like, oh, I did it. I'm going to have to do it again for the 8 o'clock crowd. But oh, for now, I did it. I'm on the swing.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I end the week with a ton of gratefulness. And I know Brad does, because I talk to him almost daily, that there's a real sense of like, aren't we lucky that our hard work has paid off and that folks have been kind about their support. And anyway, so continuing on with that gratefulness, Brad, we were going to have my wonderful assistant and helper and coworker in the studio here, Beth Reedmiller, on the show. So let's invite her on right now.
Oh, this is a perfect chance to get her on and hear what she has to say.
Yeah.
Hey, if you're listening while you work, take a minute and stand and stretch.
And while you're doing that, Brad and I are going to tell you why you should join us on Patreon.
Yeah, because, you know, when you do, you'll get hours and hours of podcasts that we've recorded just for backers.
And an exclusive Patreon post that go even deeper on the Comic Lab topics.
And access to our exclusive Discord server, a thriving community of professional cartoonists.
So you can support the show you love and get tons of actionable resources for your own cartooning.
And listen, if you can't swing a pledge this month, no worries.
You can still support the show by rating us wherever you get podcasts.
Leave us a 5-star review and a few kind words.
And that, along with mentions on social media, is incredibly helpful.
And now, let's talk comics.
Okay, so we have a third microphone set up, and we can welcome the ever delightful Beth onto the show. Beth, thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Hi, thanks for having me. Long time listener.
Beth. Long time listener. Beth made the long journey of 10 feet to walk to a microphone, everybody. So we have to be very appreciative of the effort that she has made.
I mean, I will listen to the podcast even if it wasn't my job to. So, you know.
There we go.
That's high praise indeed. We may have to have that printed up on a t-shirt.
I'll be the first one to buy that t-shirt, Brad.
Yes, yes. Oh, God. You know, we have created a monster, Dave, is that now every time something happens, somebody's going to say, you need to make a pin of that.
Anytime I stumble on my words, there's a pin for you right there.
Yeah.
Well, so Beth has been in the studio now. I think we're coming up on, am I wrong in saying 3 years, Beth?
It's like 2.5 years now, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I think in April. Wow. In April, it'll be 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it has been a delightful 2.5 years on my part. Beth and I first met, I think it was Emerald City Comic Con 2001?
2006.
2006. I'm good with years, so that's what that is. Yeah. And it's been delightful having her in the studio. So our physical setup, Brad, you have been here. Would one of you want to describe it? Rather, maybe Beth is best to describe the physical setup of the studio.
Well, it's the front room of your house, basically. Before you moved, it was you had redone your garage. But then when you moved to new house, we took over the front room. And so there's a couple chairs. There's your standing desk and then my desk kind of diagonal. And then what's it called? The treadmill desk. Gathers dust. So
no need to throw me under the bus on that.
Hey, it's me too.
Brad, the treadmill desk gets a lot of work out. Don't listen to Beth on that.
That is clear.
Well, anyway, this has been lovely having Beth on the show. That was great, Beth. Thanks for coming by.
Good night, everybody.
I think I think when we moved, we were both a little nervous about the size of it because it's it is significantly smaller than the garage we were, the really nice remodeled garage we were in. But it's worked out really well because there's only two of us now, whereas when you were doing Stripped, you had often like three or four people in there. But this little room, it's totally a perfect size. It stays really cool in the summer, and Ollie sleeps on the chair, and it's just really, it's really lovely.
Yeah, it's Ollie has been a lovely addition to the studio, Brad, because every once in a while we'll both turn around from what we're drawing and we'll go, look at little Schmoopy Poopy.
That it must be a delight.
It truly is.
Brad's favorite part of our storytelling is when we start talking about the dog. So what's great, Brad, is that we probably could work it where we had like a local area network or we had some kind of shared server in the studio. But what we often find that we do is we just both have access to my Dropbox Pro account. We just logged in all three computers in the studio to that Dropbox account. And then sometimes because of storage issues, we only sync up X amount of the folders to this or that computer. But what's nice is we can pretty seamlessly pass files back and forth to each other. Me doing the line work and then Beth doing the coloring and then back again for fixes or and then back again for her fixes on my fixes. And then, so it's pretty nice in terms of living in the future, Brad. It's great. I think we're big fans of working that way. Don't you think, Beth?
Yeah, it turns out Wi-Fi is pretty great.
Yeah. And then we airdrop this or that kind of file that we don't want to wait for or need to put on Dropbox. But it's pretty nice being in the studio together because we can, versus being working remotely, there's a lot of like, back and forth where either I don't know how to draw a thing, she might know how to use a brush, or I'll walk over to her desk and consult on colors or textures or you know, the look of a thing. So it's a nice back and forth when you are in the same space that you might not be able to get remotely. But it's better to have Beth talk about it than me.
It's, I don't know, it's really nice to have the immediate feedback of like, when I'm working on a pin design or something, be like, what do you think about this? And we talk about it for 5 minutes and then we go back to work in silence. And then like 5 minutes later, okay, what do you think about this? So it, yeah, it's working really well. And I think we both have a similar amount of energy when it comes to talking. So sometimes there are days that we mostly just listen to music and are silent. And other days we chat a lot. So it's, yeah, I think we've figured out a pretty good rhythm and routine.
Yeah, and I think music-wise, one of the nice things that you can give to one another is veto power, where you're like, I'm just not feeling XYZ today. And the other one's like, all right, we'll find something else, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're both pretty liberal
with that. Is he still playing that Irish folk music over there, Beth?
No, not for a while, although I'd probably be down with it, so I don't know.
All I know is between multiple rounds of Danny Boy and a continuous stream of Girl from Ipanema,
it was a
musical feast over at the Kellen household.
There are times where accidentally a song will just get stuck on repeat because like our Sonos app gets weird and we won't notice it for a while and be like, wait a second, has this played five times in a row?
Because we've both been head down in a drawing and then we'll both be like, wait, it's 2 hours later. Have we been listening to ELO for 2 hours for one song?
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. But Brett, I do appreciate you making fun of me for Danny Boy, which has never played in the studio in my life.
It was the only Irish song I could think of. Literally on short notice.
I don't even know how I would get access to the song Danny Boy.
Well, I know what I'm doing today.
Cut to, we're done with the podcast. Oh, Danny Boy.
Yeah, funny, you know all the words for a song that's never played in your freaking studio. So now listen, how do you set up, because when you're setting up, especially when you're in the same room, how do you set up boundaries? Particularly like, okay, Dave comes in, he's signing your paycheck, he's the boss. But at some point, Beth, you've got to have autonomy. You've got to be able to say, like every now and again, Alex will send me a very polite message that says, listen, if you keep drawing this character this way, she's going to end up with blue ears. You've got to put a line here to say where the mask stops and the ears start, you know. How did Dave make sure that you had the autonomy to say that without being nervous or feeling self-conscious about talking to this guy that's signing your paychecks?
I don't know if I've ever felt weird about being like, oh, hey, this one thing is a little off, just because I think Dave and I both come at it as we both just want to make sure the art is good. And it's not like a personal attack. And like, I've been through a lot of art school, so a lot of critique. So I don't know how to take and give criticism, I would hope. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's just the work. I don't know. That's a really interesting question, though. I don't know if we've ever really run into like, and Dave definitely doesn't like giving criticism, so he tiptoes around a lot of stuff. I'm like, just tell me, it's fine. It can change. It's your work. It's fine.
Yeah. Actually, the quickest way you know that Dave disagrees with you is when he agrees really, really quick. Like, I'll say, oh, Dave, you know what we ought to do? We ought to do an entire comic lab in Pig Latin. And he'll say, yes, absolutely. And let's never, ever do that.
So one thing, though, about Beth giving notes, I often find is that when you are working by yourself, more often than not, the notes and the feedback she gives are really helpful catches of things that I just straight up missed.
Yes.
Like, hey, you forgot to add, you're missing a word here, or hey, somebody doesn't have an ear on panel three, and I think you like literally, Beth,
yeah, just yesterday.
Like, hey, Arthur doesn't have a tail on panel two, and I was like, what? How did I not draw a tail? So it's
that's super helpful.
Yeah, and so if you view feedback and criticism of in friendship and trust of like, hey, this is just a course correction, not a critique of you as a person. I think both Beth and I try to approach it that way, that like...
I think that's a skill set that a lot of artists either need to build up stronger or kind of have innately, because it comes from probably a couple different places of like, I just want the art to be good, so please someone tell me how it's for it to be better. Or if they take it so personally, then any critique is on them and not the artwork. And so I think that's a skill set that is really important, especially if you're doing like corporate work where the critiques are not about you personally. It's just because some middle management person needed to put in their opinion. So you have to change something. And it's, you know, if you take every single little change as personal, it's going to go real rough for you. So, you know.
There is a balance that you have to strike too, in that if you are going to note an artist that you're working with for changes, you also have to be very willing to allow them the room to run and play in the way they wanted to do other things, you know, so that, don't you think, Beth, there's the balance of like,
oh, absolutely.
Like, no, do this however you want to do it. And then there's other times where I'm like, I really had wanted this green or whatever. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's pretty rare that Dave gives me color notes just because he's colorblind.
sorry, go ahead.
Because he doesn't see a lot of... Oh, great story. The other day, we were talking about what dogs see, because it's a myth that they see in black and white. They have two cones versus our three, so they just see a limited spectrum. And so I pulled up, I found online a comparison of like, this picture is what humans see, and this is kind of similar to what dogs see. I was like, see, look, Dave, it's really interesting. And Dave goes, I don't see a difference. Like, I don't, are they different? I'm like, oh, Dave, you're a dog. You have dog eyes. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So Brad, the next time you say that I'm dumb as a dog, now you know that you're right.
So I think Dave is very...
Well, it explains all that scratching.
That's a much more polite joke than you could have made, and I really appreciate that.
Oh, yeah, you know I backed off. So now that's interesting, because actually I've got the same exact philosophy myself, and that is, I want somebody I'm collaborating with to have to put 100% of themselves in it. Mm-hmm. So chances are, unless it's really important, I'm not going to get involved and say, I think you should do it this way, or I'm seeing it this way. Generally, I want that person to be fully invested, and I want them to bring everything of themselves in it. And I think that's kind of how you do it, is you collaborate with somebody whose work you admire, and then you get the hell out of their way.
Yeah.
Right?
What's the point of collaborating if you don't let them work?
For example, like the pins that everyone got for Comic Lab that asked me about my so-so art. It's worth noting that, like, Beth did the sketches. She asked Brad and I for feedback, but that was Beth's chance to run with it, and she did a great job.
Right.
The execution was beautiful on that.
Yeah, that one was fun. I really enjoyed that one.
And so it's fun to let someone who has talent and skill and who you trust go, all right, check in maybe at the early stages and we'll talk about it. And I think Beth, the notes that Brad and I had were minimal, but also maybe helpful.
Oh, right? Totally made it better. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, but then ultimately that was Beth's baby and she did great. And that's just a small example that everyone here is familiar with of like how things would work in a studio where, and also there are times where Beth and I, after 2.5 years, I know when she really doesn't like something that I've done and she will.
Yeah.
In politeness and friendship, be like, are you sure you want to do it that way? And I both know that I could keep doing it the way I'm doing it, but that if she has voiced that opinion, I probably should take a minute and consider, like, well, maybe this is not, maybe there's a good reason why she's stopping me in my tracks and going, now hold on, maybe don't draw it that way.
I think Dave and I both express our dislike about things in the same way in that we're like, oh, what do you think? And then the other person just is silent. Just quiet.
That's true. Yeah, the other one's like, ah. All right, so I'll change that. I'll change
okay,
that.
So that's a no. Got it.
So now, have you ever been a sounding board for a joke or a piece of writing where Dave spins around his chair and he says, I've got one for you. Arthur walks into the room and says, boppity boppity bop. And then, of course, you wait for the reaction and probably it's gales of laughter, but sometimes it's not. Are you ever a sounding board for humor?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We pitch on jokes a lot.
Yeah.
And oftentimes we'll be like, he'll be riding a drive and just needs like a funny, like he'll have an idea for a punchline, but need like a funnier, like turn of phrase for it.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got somebody that's got to be funny.
Yeah. Or like, geez, Louise. So much ribbing, or like on a Sheldon being like, I have this idea for a joke. Is there a better way to come about it? And so we just talk through it. Yeah, and it's really fun. I really enjoy that process a lot.
Yeah.
It essentially becomes a mini writer's room where you know, like, and Brad and Beth, you both know this as artists, where you know you're in the wheelhouse. You know, you can sense that you're close.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
You just need the advice and input of someone you trust to be like, all right, we just need a different word here than bourgeoisie. We need it punchier, you know?
Yeah.
And so the other person goes, rich guy, Daddy Warbucks, you know, that kind of thing. And sometimes it's just a fun build. It's a yes and process to get to a better joke.
Yeah.
You know?
And a lot of times he'll come at it in a way that I don't expect, in that it'll be totally silent. And then all of a sudden he'll be like, give me names of different kind of swimwear. And I'm like, what is happening? Like the other day with a drive, I think we ended up with like crop top or something, but I was like, tankini, what else? Bikini, like what else is there?
I almost went with tankini because it's such a great phrase, but I wasn't sure that it had a cultural awareness as broad as the word I ended up with. But yeah, crop tankini top. Is an amazing word.
But yeah, sometimes it's like out of the blue. It's pretty good.
You just all of a sudden feel like you're on a pop-up game show.
Yeah.
Name me 10 types of swimwear. Tick, 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 tick,
oh,
tick,
no.
Tick,
oh, no.
Tick,
tick.
Well, and there are times, Brad, you've been on the receiving end of this. There are times where Beth and I know collectively that we are close to a joke, but that we're stuck. We can't get there. So then we literally call you.
Yeah.
And then on speakerphone, it's a 3-person writing room, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's really fun when you've got 3 brains working, because then you're really playing off of things. And if everybody, again, has the confidence and the permission to say, okay, you're a full member here, go in there and swing away. That's important in a collaboration, don't you think?
Yeah, and I noticed, Beth, that Brad never does that with us. We
always
call him.
That's true.
For ideas,
Brad does not call us. That's interesting.
No, no. Well, yeah. Yeah, I was hoping you'd not notice that. No, I you know what? I probably should more, tell you the truth. But besides, think about that. Do you really want me calling you? You know, I don't think I it's like, do we really want to work on yet another pun? No.
Yes. Yes, I do, Brad.
So the fun thing, though, to talk about with, especially while Beth's here, is one of the advantages, you know, we were talking, Brad, about the gratefulness that we feel about our art career, is that some of the things that are pleasantly surprising to you. And with Beth in the studio, having an artist that's super professionally trained, what lovely things can come of that is that there are sometimes where I'm thinking on a short-term project, and Beth can be actively either thinking about or implementing or brainstorming for a long-term project. Don't you think, Beth?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I mean, that kind of happened, and it's happening now, but it happened when we did the Pugs book. We were like, oh, we are going to do this big Pugs compilation. Majority of those need to be colored. So just in the background, I was coloring away for 6 months. And then it happened again with the pop culture. We were like, oh, shoot, it's January. We need to kickstart this book in a couple months, and none of these have been colored. So that was a mad dash to get those done. But it is nice to kind of Dave works on the day-to-day stuff, and I can kind of get projects ready, up and running as he goes. And I think you've mentioned this on the podcast before, but I'm recoloring Drive stuff right now. And so that's if I'm waiting for Dave to finish a comic or something, I'm just working on old Drives in the background.
Yeah.
Which is actually super fun.
Yeah. And so other ways that's been helpful, Brad, is like for the children's book that I'm going to be doing in the next couple months, for Your Life as a Line, Beth has been doing color tests and texture tests of like what works well with the character design and the look for that book and what we might like to explore. And that's, oddly enough, that's really helpful from a writing perspective, because if I know how it's going to look and how it's going to feel, it will change the way that I draw it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I will come at it from a different approach, and it might actually change up my line art so that it better marries with the color and the texture feel that we're going to establish for that book. So it's a nice, it's kind of like two train lines coming ever closer mm-hmm. and closer and closer until eventually, hopefully, it's the one train track, you know?
Yeah. I think that book is going to be a unique challenge in that it is much more kind of like braiding, where like you write and then you draw and then you write it. Unlike your general comics where you write the whole script and then you sit down and draw it, it's going to be a lot of give and take. Yeah. And I think it's going to be interesting with you and I, with drawing and writing and then the coloring and the whole thing, because it is really a very like integrated piece. It's not just a comic strip. So I think it's going to be really interesting when we really get going on it and see how it works.
I'm kind of mentally prepared, Brad, for that project for the first time in a while to have entire pages thrown out or rewritten, which is not something that I normally do, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's gonna take a little getting used to.
Yeah. I'm basically preparing myself to fail towards a better goal, you know, like not fail right. like intentionally, but fail like, oh, we tried mm-hmm. this path. It's not working. Let's switch gears and go this way. We're basically trying to invent a world. Whereas Sheldon, the look is established, Drive, the look is established. There's parameters that we both know that we're working under. Whereas this children's mm-hmm. book, you are trying to establish a tone and a look and a tenor, both from the writing, the drawing, the coloring, the texture, the paper choices. And so you basically want to have them all work well and marry well together. And that's going to be a process, and it's going to be kind of fun. So far, it's fun. Anyway.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, listen, we actually have a $5 Patreon question that Ooh. I would love to have Beth sit in on, because I think she'd bring a fantastic perspective to the question. What do you think?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So this is coming in from our Patreon backer named Sky. And first, I just got to say, I was so impressed when I saw this question, because you'll see what I mean. But it's like you'd hope that more people would have the thought process that Sky is going through. And here's what Sky says. I'm a writer for an upcoming webcomic series working with an artist who is wonderfully bringing the story to life. Already, not my story, the story. Mm-hmm. Already, yeah. Sky's got their head screwed on straight. I always look at the wording of this stuff. Not bringing my story, bringing the story to life. My question is, are there any pet peeves you've discovered when it comes to having someone doing the writing and perhaps storyboarding for a project you're involved in? In other words, on the other side of the scale, are there any things you'd be thankful or hopeful for when collaborating? In other words, this is a writer saying, how do I best work with this artist? How can I keep from making mistakes that are going to put the artist in a bad way, maybe not give that artist enough flexibility to do everything they need to do? And what are some things that I should be focusing on doing on the other side? What should I be proactively working towards in working on this collaboration with an artist? And I want to hear you first on that, Beth. What are some things that, some pet peeves that people working with artists could avoid? And what are some do's that you could pair with those don'ts.
I like how Brad is prepping to throw me into the bus. Like, Beth, what are some things that some people could do better in their studio when talking with other people?
What are pet peeves that when people do them, no matter
totally
who,
unnamed
it
people.
Is,
yeah.
Yes.
I mean, it's interesting because, Dave and I collaborate here, but I definitely view this more as like, obviously, it is his work. So I bow to him more often than not, like all the time.
And that's part of the contract, right? Yeah. That happens at 9 and at 2:15.
Yeah. We do our the daily prayers to Dave Keller.
That got real weird real quick.
But I think in a more accurate to what the questioner is asking is a
questioner, by the way. Did you see that, Brad? God.
That's in the contract too.
So I worked on a comic. I drew a comic for a writer couple 2 years ago, I think now. And I'm supposed to be working on one right now. That they both came at it from like, we've been wanting to write a comic, but we don't really know how. So we've written this script, but like, tell us what's wrong, tell us how to fix it, and just kind of take charge and go for it, which was really nice to be like, oh, this page actually has too much action. You have to split into two. I cannot fit everything you want on this one page. And they were like, cool, great, go for it. Even though they're paying me by the page. I was like, this isn't because I want more money. It's because I can't draw it.
It's for the best. Yeah.
Yeah. I like literally can't. But both in both of these situations, just giving the artist the freedom to be like, here are the words. But like, sometimes I know my words probably won't make it on the page because it is for the good of the project. I think it's probably what we've been talking about of like, give the artists autonomy, give them agency to make it the best art, because they come from a different perspective than a writer. And so like, things may not need to be verbalized and things may actually look better and read better in a different way than you thought. And so kind of giving up your ego and letting them take it is probably the best way to not have a pissed off artist on your hands. But as far as it comes to Dave Kellett, here's some Dave Kellett trash. No, there's really nothing. I mean, the biggest thing I think we've probably worked kind of our way into the past 2.5 years is just that like sometimes he would overdraw because I think he was obviously Dave's been used to just drawing in black and white for the majority of his career. And so sometimes he would draw too much and so the color wouldn't really... Maybe what's an example? Like outlining spots on a creature. Like I can do that in color.
That doesn't need to be in line work. Yeah.
And so like he's kind of like every now and then he asks like, do you want me to draw in clouds or you just want to color those in? I'm like, I'll just do it. It's fine. And So I think that has been a way that we've figured out how to collaborate of like, oh, actually that looks better just in color. You don't need line art. Or he'll put it on a different layer, be like, this is where I want it. And I'll turn it off and just color it over. So I don't know. Does that answer the question?
Absolutely. Now, I want to throw it over to Dave. Dave, we've been ribbing you like crazy, but it's clear that you are very good at collaborating because you've done a lot of collaborating, not only with Beth, but with a lot of people on Drive and so forth. What are some things that you keep in the back of your mind when you're working on somebody with a project?
So both in terms of hiring Beth and hiring people for Tales of the Drive, and it's tricky because sometimes it bites you in the butt, but most of the time it works out. When you hire someone that you like and respect and who you can tell has their own internal compass of, I will do my best, you know? Because if someone else has an internal marker of like, I want to do quality work, then you will get quality work. But if you have to force them and remind them, and that's not a way towards a partnership. That's not a way towards a working relationship. That's not a way towards a boss-employee relationship. Like, there's no good payoff there if someone has to be told, hey, do your best, you know? Like, you want to find and work with people in life. And there's not always... That's a point of privilege to have that. Like, sometimes you are paired with people for whom they're like, that's just a gig. I'm just putting in the time, you know? And you're like, all right, let's make our best of it. But I've been lucky enough with Tales of the Drive and with working with Beth that it's... it's delightful to have someone for whom they want to do their best with whatever limitations are on the project, but they try to make it shine because then if everyone's working towards that of their own personal best, there's a nice give and take. But I will say this though, there can't help but be conflict between writer and artist. And I know that because artist Dave very often is pissed off at writer Dave. You know, I hate writer Dave when I am artist Dave. I hate him because he's like, all right, this scene needs to have two interstellar starships crashing into each other with a nebula exploding in the background. And also there's a space dragon. And you're like, the artist you was like, go to hell. I'm not, what? Yeah. I don't want to draw that. Why did you write that?
So many times I've exclaimed to myself in my own work, who thought of this? Whose idea was this anyway? All right, it's fine.
So I think to the questioner's question,
now it's two against one
in terms
over here.
Of like, you just have to recognize that sometimes that process of communicating what's in your brain that you've translated into words that they can pass to another person that they are then translating into images, that's an imperfect process. So mutual respect, friendship, and open communication are key because it sometimes is... It can feel like a jerk setting you up to fail when a writer's like, here you go. I want the entire Roman army pressing my hill against the Visigoths. And you're like, what?
Thanks there, buddy.
And I think to a similar point, if you are working with someone that you don't know and don't have a friendship with, and I mean, probably also when you do, making sure that your boundaries are very clearly laid out of like, you get one round of corrections. We're not going to go back and forth on this forever.
Right.
I think it's super important because that could lead to a ton of pain and frustration too. if you just don't know each other's like working style, just be super clear about it when starting of like, this is what I expect from you. What do you expect from me? It's awkward as heck sitting down with someone and being like, we are adults. We are going to talk like contracts. Like, what is this? But it's so helpful. Like, it's just, it saves so much pain in the end.
Yeah, it comes down to communication.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Brad, let me ask all three of us, but I'll ask Brad first, and then Beth can answer as well. So on the other side of the scale, what are the things, this is from our questioner, what are the things that you see that you're thankful or hopeful for when you're collaborating? Brad, what are the things that make you happy or grateful for when you're collaborating?
Well, if you don't mind, I'm going to take that question in another direction because Beth hinted upon it a little bit there. But see, the things that would make me happy might not make another artist happy. Mm. And so like what I would want would be freedom. I would want the artist or I'm sorry, I would want the writer to hand me a script. And me being who I am, I would bristle even if they had panel breakdowns. Like if they said panel one, this happens, panel two, I'd be like, screw you. I'll tell you, I'll break this into panels. I know how to break it. And I might have another idea about how to do these panels that you don't even think about. You know, I would want that flexibility, whereas somebody else might take a look at that and they'd say, oh, that's wait. I don't want to do all that. Just tell me what the panel should be and I'll follow the panels. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think everybody's going to be a little bit different. And to Beth's point, but for me, it's freedom. I want complete autonomy. You do the writing, I'll do the art, and at the end of it, this is going to be a collaborative process that is both of our work, not just one person or the other, but it's everybody's work. That's what I want. Is I would want freedom, and also the ability to call this person up and share some ideas and say, okay, what we've got here, I'd like to take it in a different direction, not change the writing per se, because again, you've also got to respect one another's forte, but just to say, okay, we're kind of indicating a certain thing. I'm thinking about doing a different way, and here's why, and to be able to at least pitch that. And if it doesn't work in the overall arc, then that's fine. But I would want to have that ability to kind of make some suggestions. What do you think, Beth?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I think oftentimes when there are changes, I like to know why. I'm not a fan of the just do it. Because again, I think that's taking away your autonomy of like, if there is an actual reason for future like pages or just like aesthetically, I'm not a fan of that. Like, okay, you know what?
Right,
we can figure out.
Right.
But just just change this, change that. That's a little too corporate-y for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, one of the things that I'm most grateful for is, and this I know sounds Pollyanna-ish, but when people come at a project with enthusiasm and optimism, I can only speak from Tales of the Drive on this, but I can tell you, and I won't say the names, but I can tell you in a moment, a second heartbeat here, who I would have back to do a second Drive story, because they came at it with fun, with optimism, with energy, with enthusiasm. And so I just want to say for people starting their career or mid-career or even late in their career, remember that so much of life, the relationships that you develop can impact even the final work and what you get hired for. And those that came at it with joy and enthusiasm and optimism, boy, did that come through in the work and in our working relationship. And I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. That makes a big difference, right?
Yeah, I mean, because it's also, we've talked about it before, the journey is part of the fun. And if you make the journey fun as a collaborator, gosh, isn't that lovely? You know, what a nice thing to go through. Like Beth and I laugh a lot in the studio. Mm-hmm. And isn't that lovely that while we're making art, you can enjoy the thing? And so like, if you hire Eeyore, sometimes you're like, oh, this is not great. You know, like, I can make the line art. You're like, all right, well, I'm sorry that I'm asking you to dig this ditch. I apologize.
Yeah. And guess what? Monday, Eeyore's going to be walking back in the door. You got that to look forward to all weekend long.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas you, I know, you're like, all right, another Monday, Beth and I are going to go get it, and it's going to be great stuff, you know?
Yeah,
like I can tell that just from being in the studio with you, that you both have that same kind of mindset.
Well, one thing we didn't talk about, Beth, and maybe it's more fun to have you talk about it, is the Monday morning meetings that we do. You want to share with people what we do on Mondays?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes on Tuesday or Thursday, depending on how the week goes. We just kind of round the wagons and like just talk through the week and the day and figure out like what are the priorities for the week and what are we trying to accomplish in the day and what really needs to get done. I think that's super helpful just to get on the same page. Also, because Dave just has 400 things going on. So to kind of aim the laser at what we really need to do helps a lot of like, oh, that's right, we have 10 commissions that need to get done before Christmas. That's right, we should probably work on that. Because, you know, with kids and work and everything, by the end of the week, everything's a little frazzled. So getting that all rounded up on Monday it's really helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah, so as far as staring down the week as Eeyore, Brad, like we both roll into Monday going, ugh. But we have a cup of coffee and we joke for a minute and then we start talking about the week. And then within a half an hour, we're ready to start working. And it's a nice, I think it's a nice way to start the week, actually.
Definitely.
Well, this has been a fantastic, I've really enjoyed talking about collaborations with you guys. And I want to thank you, Beth, for collaborating on this episode of Comic Lab with us.
Absolutely. So happy to be here, you guys.
Yes, it's been a better show for your presence, and that's just leads me to say this. You've been listening to Comic Lab, the show about making comics and making a living from comics.
Your hosts have been the ever-delightful Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com over at webcomics.com. Good job, Dave. And the cartoonist of Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com.
And Dave, Danny Boy Kellett, co-director of Stripped. I know I got you with that one.
I go real quiet.
I know. I went too far. I'm sorry. Co-director of Stripped and cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and Drive at drivecomic.com.
And because I didn't point it out before, I will point it out now. You can go check out Beth's amazing work, or Birth, as I like to call her, I guess. You can go check out Beth's amazing work at BethReidMiller.com, and that's BethReidMiller.com, BethReidMiller.com. And the Comic Lab theme song is used with permission from Andy Creighton at TheWorldRecord.net. This episode was edited by Matt Woodard of Woodsong Productions at www.woodsong.media. And our sponsor for this week, of course, the good folks of Wacom over at WACOM.com.
Comic Lab is made possible by your support on patreon.com/comiclab. So we'll go ahead and say that twice. patreon.com/comiclab. Danny Boy, Danny Boy. Isn't that Danny Boy? Danny Boy. Yes, it is. They go Danny Boy, Danny Boy.
I don't know what just happened. Danny Boy, Danny Boy.
The pipes are calling you.
Are you having a stroke? That is not Danny Boy.
I think we need to call in a welfare check on Brad. What's happening?
You know those things at airports where you got to get out the heart defibrillator? I think we need to have someone rush over to Brad's studio with a heart defibrillator. I want to do my cold reading of Brad singing Danny Boy.
Yeah.
All right. Please welcome to the stage, fresh from Juilliard, Brad Geiger. Oh, Danny Boy. The pipes. Calling you from Glen to Glen. Down the mountainside.
It's late Frank Sinatra when he just starts talking. Like, it's not even...
By late, Beth means absolutely dead Frank Sinatra. That was dead Frank Sinatra singing Danny Boy.
But somehow he's still super drunk.
Yes, you've described Brad singing. That's great.